Millions of companies are missing out on business if they're not ranked in ChatGPT or Google and not recommended by ChatGPT. And that's why we have an expert here. His name is Ronnie Malevsky, and he has over 19 years of experience in digital marketing. And during his career, he has helped small and medium-sized businesses and enterprise brands grow their businesses. And he's currently involved in the local marketing community as a speaker, mentor, and community work chair. He's a proud father and husband and investor in several startups. Now, I have a very important question, which is how customers can find you in ChatGPT and Google. Now, interestingly, a lot of people find me in ChatGPT, but I have no idea how this happened. And I'm talking for my podcast. A lot of people say, "Oh, I found you in ChatGPT." I'm like, "Wow, interesting," but I really have no idea how this happened. So, tell us about how can a company rank in ChatGPT and Google, and what are the key things a company should do to get there?
Welcome to Awakened Titans Podcast with Lily Patrescu. Mind-blowing conversations with influential business titans sharing how you can manifest abundance, love, joy, success through quantum awakening, quantum manifestation, quantum healing, quantum miracles, exponential business growth, and innovative products and services.
So I'm going to say something controversial right to start. And also thank you, for having me. And I'm excited to dive into this. I think the first is let's get one thing really straight. You don't actually sort of rank in ChatGPT the same way you rank in Google, right? There's no page on one position. There's no blue links. There's no keyword stuffing. I think that's going to sort of save you. And I think what you're seeing, yes, a lot, it's the question everybody's asking, right? And years of sort of not caring about SEO or having it on the back burner, just having it on everybody's mind now, which is really interesting. And I think a lot of those companies for many years that had built authority, that had built what Google calls EEAT, right? Expertise, authority, and trust, they are doing well, right? And I think large language models don't think in rankings anymore. They think in what we call confidence, right? And so when, and there is a difference between the sort of AEO and GEO, right? Are you the sourced answer in Google when they're looking for you in that, that question? Or are you actually GEO being cited and reputable and people want to actually link back to you and mention you and recommend you? Two different things. Are you answering a question and then you kind of just show up as your brand, the best one to answer that question? Or are people actually recommending your brand when they're looking for the best agency, the best podcast, the best, etc.? So let's take a step back. Large language models, they don't really think in rankings, they think in confidence. And so when ChatGPT or Gemini or Perplexity, they answer questions, it's choosing the safest, most credible response, not the most optimized page, right? That means your goal isn't to game an algorithm. It's to become the most reliable source in your category. So I can walk you through, if you'd like, some of the, how does it go from foundation to the rest?
Yes, tell us please, how can someone get found in ChatGPT and Google?
Yeah, so I think the foundation starts with sort of this, what I call entity clarity, right? AI needs to clearly understand who you are and what you do and how you're connected across the web, right? So that means consistent business information everywhere, strong brand signals, structured data that leaves zero ambiguity, right? If AI can't confidently identify your business as a real established entity, it won't recommend you, period, right? Then a lot of that is, traditional, it's a new paid of code on SEO. So the foundations of SEO have always really been there, right? And now it's going that extra mile and making adjustments to say, okay, well, there's a new way of search that's happening outside of Google. What are some of the other things that we need to do and adjust, right? But it is almost like the way I look at it is, you go to, elementary school and to learn to read. And then when you go, which is the foundations, right, and to understand and different subjects, but then when you sort of go to university, you have to apply that. You take everything that you had and you apply, and that's kind of the foundation of where we're at now, right? So next comes, authority through usefulness. So LLMs, they favor content that answer questions cleanly, directly, and with evidence. So the way that it works is that it will actually parse paragraphs versus an entire site the way it used to work. So the brands that show up the most often aren't the ones that publish deep, transparent content, you know, pricing breakdowns, comparisons. Those are the ones that show up. Pros and cons, step-by-step explanations. And then they back those claims with sort of credible citations. So AI trusts brands that reference trusted sources. So not brands that only talk about themselves. So how much are you linking to others yourselves? And then there's what we call the last part, which is the offsite validation, which most companies really underestimate. ChatGPT, Gemini Claude, they don't just read your website. They cross-check you against the rest of the internet. So mentions in reputable publication, podcast appearances, industry awards, certifications, consistent third-party references in, they all tell AI the same thing. Other people trust this brand too, right? So you have your sort of entity clarity, which I talked a little bit about in the foundation where they need to understand who you are. Then the authority, right? Which I mentioned about the brands, you know, trusted sources, not just talking about yourselves. And then that's an offsite validation. And then another critical factor is what we call content structure. So AI prefers content that's really easy to extract. And what is really interesting about the way Google works was it was sort of this black box, right? And everybody was kind of guessing, like, what do I need to do to be the blue link? Is it my technical? Is it this? With AI, the ingredients are there, right? So we understand that they're showing it. It's open source. We understand semantic overlap and semantic density, and we understand the way that they're pulling and vector databases, all the technical aspects that sort of seem maybe foreign. You can actually really study it, right? You can understand the way that they're going to extract information. And so they just, each model just kind of has those ingredients that we can see. And they're just slightly different. The temperature is different for each, right? And so content structure, we know, right, that AI prefers content that's really easy to extract. It's clear headers, written for humans, concise summaries, right? FAQ sections. And then what we call schema markup, which actually tells the robot sort of, you know, what do we, is this a review? Is this a place of business? So we're actually, they're able to better, easy understand and extract it. So that helps your insights. And so if your best ideas are sort of buried halfway down a wall of text, they're way far less to likely to surface. And so when you are typing into ChatGPT, what you don't realize is you might be looking for something, but there is a thing called a query fan out, which is basically it will ask your prompt and your question, but it will actually make many iterations of what that is to try and get that information and source it, right? And so you can study that and look at it, but at the end of the day, you know, you have to stop thinking in keywords. This is the most important thing, and you need to start thinking in questions. LLMs are trained on how people ask things and not just what they search for. So the more clearly and comprehensively that you answer real buyer questions, the more often AI is going to, you know, pull away from your brand when those questions come up and pull your brand. So how do you rank in ChatGPT? You don't chase the model. You become the source that it trusts. And if you do that consistently, you know, AI will start doing your marketing for you one answer at a time.
That's so interesting. Tell us more about how someone can leverage the questions that people ask in ChatGPT in order to rank. So let's take this for a very practical example, like book publishing business. And then let's say, how would someone be able to first know what questions people ask in ChatGPT? Would someone just go to ChatGPT and say, what kind of questions are you generally asked about this topic? And then you would wait for ChatGPT to kind of give you the answer? Or is that a better way to find out what kind of questions are being asked about that particular topic? And then how do you leverage this in order to make sure that you appear for those kind of topics? Is it that you would start doing some articles and answering those exact questions. How can I write my story? How can I publish my story? How can I become a best-selling author? This kind of thing. And then you would actually do an article that answers that specific question in your own voice. And you would put as many articles about that particular topic in your own website, or as many variations of the kind of questions that would appear in ChatGPT. And that is how you would leverage those kind of questions? Or is there a different way to do it that is better than what I've said?
So I think the one thing I'll step back and I'll say, and I'll get to how we find those prompts, but I think that it requires a shift, like as I mentioned, from keyword thinking to entity thinking, right? Making sure your brand is sort of understood, validated, and contextually accurate across the entire web. So you can think of like algorithms, so your traditional SEO is sort of these linear problem solving, so moving from start to finish along a fixed path, while models like GEO, they perform sort of spatial problem solving. So they explore many paths simultaneously. And that's why the models don't always produce identical results on repeated runs. So you can ask those questions and then get a different answer, right? Their reasoning is probabilistic and it's not deterministic, right? So algorithms are sort of transparent, explainable, reproducible, but rigid. The models are flexible, adaptive, creative, but they're sort of opaque and prone to drift. And the way that you would find these prompts or your questions that people are asking is through tools. You can look in Google Search Console, eventually in GA4, and get some of it, but it's not enough. They're sort of catching up. So there's different ways to look at measurement, for sure, and that's another shift. But using tools like, and Answer the Public, which is a tool of NP Digital, you can get a lot of these. Being one of them, Rightsonic, Scrunch. There's a lot of them. There's sort of the high-end enterprise level ones, and then you kind of have the day-to-day ones. And those are where you can actually use these tools to get a better understanding of what prompts are being there. What I would recommend most brands to do is take a list of the top 25 prompts or questions that people are asking about your brand. You can go into Answer the Public and sort of see some of that. You can get a lot of it from these tools. You set this up, and this is what we do with our clients. So we take, for example, the top 25, and we have what we call like a visibility score. And we track citations, we track mentions, we track our visibility score. And then we go in there as we're working on improving. We use it as a baseline, and then we can see, are we showing up more and more and more? Are we becoming the trusted source? But we always try and do it at the end of the day to answer a human question, right? And that's really what's important, is how do you attack that? But the short answer is there's tools that can do it, and you need to make sure that you go in now. And you mentioned this before, Lily, before you said, people are starting to, kind of say, hey, ChatGPT referenced me. Well, by 2030, it's actually predicted that the clicks are going to actually outweigh any other organic clicks coming to the site, coming from these LLMs. So now you're just kind of seeing it. And where we're entering this fascinating problem is that people can come and buy something off your website, and it will never show up as organic. What they'll do is they'll have done all their information, whether it's through an AI agent, through a chatbot, through something else, have learned everything about you from third-party sources, from what it's citing from you, and then come and make a sale if they're ready, and it will just show up as a direct click and a purchase. And you're like, hey, all that effort that I did, did it work? Because in my analytics, it's just showing up as direct. But that's why it's important to have some of these other tools, so you can start measuring differently versus, how much organic traffic, how much earned media traffic am I getting?
Thank you. Tell us more about growing trust and authority on your website. So for example, with PR, you would need to do like as many press releases and so on, and be mentioned in as many press releases as possible that are reputable. And then basically you would link that to your website, in the sense of you would mention that you were featured in Entrepreneur, for example, and you would put that the link of where you were featured. And is that the kind of thing that would help you to rank, for example, to be found in ChatGPT or Google?
Yes, I think, I think here's the mistake that the most companies make. They assume being verifiable is the same as sort of being recommendable, and it's not, right? Having a clean technical fundamentals is like showing your ID at the door, right? You're allowed in the building, but that doesn't mean you're getting invited onto the stage, right? So that technical hygiene matters that I talked about before. But where the shift becomes obvious becomes a little bit about, you know, trust signals. And AI trust come down to sort of three layers, right? We talked about the technical, which makes you eligible, but the second is authority trust, right? Which proves that you're useful. And then there's also reputation and trust. And yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we're doing with our clients is trying to answer questions as always, but being a source of news is very important and spending that actual time. So it could be through digital PR, it could be through guides, it could be through, you know, answering questions, and making things really, really, you know, interesting outside of a specific topic. So it could, you know, let's say you want to be subject matter experts on something specific. You want to be the one who's going to make the specific guide, and you want to make newsworthy stuff, right? They're picking up a lot of news. And so you can't force your way into that. You need to do something. So using your first party data or using third party data. So let's say doing some type of survey or a lot of companies sitting on a lot of really interesting data. How are you using that to add value and create something newsworthy that is not inherently, look at me, look at me, look at me. This is my business, but I'm now creating value because I'm sitting on this data. So it could be a report. And you can look at something, anything. You can look at a trucking business and say, oh my God, I'm sitting on data. What do people care? Well, what about the top 10, you know, rest stops in America that people are going to, and you're sitting on that data. You can create that guide, you can push it, you can publish it. So the idea of digital PR just being about press releases and announcing a new product is not the way that we recommend going about it. It's really about creating value and creating something new constantly, and then pushing that out to the media in terms of digital PR, which can come in many forms.
Thank you. Tell me an example of what someone could create for a publishing business to in terms of like information, guides.
So what kind of publishing business?
So publishing business for nonfiction authors.
Okay. So a nonfiction publishing business, and that they're what they represent author, they represent authors?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they would have readership and viewability. So just off the top of my head, and we didn't talk about this, could be, well, people are really, could be what kind of topics are people the most interested in, right? You know, what kind of themes in the books are the most interesting? What kind of characters do they like? If you're sitting on all that kind of information, you have access to what people are buying, what people are purchasing, what they're saying, even summarizing their reviews, and nobody has the time to go and look and say, oh, we got all these reviews on this different topic. Well, you know what? This is what people have to say. This is what first of all, answer engines love listicles, they love guides, and they love comparisons, right? That's what people do, right? And there's a reason they like these things. They like the pros and cons. They like this novel versus this, your competitor versus you. They want to know your pricing. And you'll see, even in the e-commerce space, we're seeing a lot of the queries. People want top furniture, you know, top tables under $150. We want top clothes, top pants under $50. Grouping these are how people search for long tail information. And so if you're sitting on a lot of that data, I think I would ask, what are the questions people ask? You need to do your research. What do people want to know? What's out there, and how do I make it better? Are there articles already out there on this specific topic? Do I have more data that I can add to make it relevant? And when you do that and you're really adding value, that is naturally going to help, right? Like I always mentioned the word, nothing about hacks. There are ways that you can, you know, be smart and do research on how people are doing it and have been evolved, and then you can adjust to it. But at the end of the day, you have to answer questions for real humans.
Thank you. For those customers that do find you in ChatGPT and Google, how can you make sure that you not only turn them into visitors of your website, but also convert them into clients?
Yeah. So I think the biggest is this, it's like any headline that you look at, like when you have sort of like a clickbait headline, right? It's only really clickbait if when you watch the video after it didn't answer the question. You can have something really outlandish that you mention, but then you got to come through. with it, right? So you can have like something really, really controversial or really out there. And then you kind of click on it and there's kind of this wah, wah, wah feeling after when you get there. And for me, it's the same thing, right? Like you don't want to just say, hey, oh man, I was excited. I clicked on this article, but they didn't, they just got me, right? And so it's all about delivering. And it's the same thing with a business. When you pitch a business and then they become a customer, you can say all these fancy things to get people through the door, but you need to deliver on it. And so I would say the first thing is over time, that won't work. Whatever you're doing, it should almost delight the user even more when they get on there. And I think that's something that we've built. Like we are, you know, NP Digital, we're one of the top blogs in the world. And if you go look at some of the posts that we do, that either Neil writes or the team writes, we spend a lot of time, a lot of research, a lot of time. We thoroughly go through the subject. And so that when we're, you know, posting, you know, or we're doing a podcast or we're doing a webinar that we do, think, I mean, I'm not too sure how many agencies are spending this amount of time not on their clients, but really trying to deep into a topic and really make marketing a better place and genuinely do that. I think then it comes through. And I think that's why we're sourced naturally, because we're actually going and spending the effort and the time. And then the other thing is, are you measuring it? So Lily, you definitely can go into your Google Analytics. You can put some, what we call regexes in, and you kind of isolate the traffic that are coming from these different LLMs. And then you can actually monitor the traffic, and then you can actually go verify, okay, what pages are they coming through and what was the user journey? How long did they stay? What did they click? And then you can sort of iterate it. So you actually don't have any blind spots. A lot of people don't do that extra mile. So that's something that I recommend to say, I think we're answering the question, but then there's the data that's actually going to show it and you can see it right now.
Do you find that for those customers that do find you the customers that find you in Google, I noticed as I'm typing, let's say, any particular topic, what comes up first is actually the AI answering the question, and I'm wondering how can we leverage that? Is there any way we can leverage that aside from everything you talked about?
So do you mean the answer engine, like when Google's looking for you right at the beginning, and like it will just kind of show in Google specifically, not in another search, you'll sort of see the answer?
Yeah. So, you know, like when you type, let's say, how to find the best restaurants in Miami, for example,
yeah,
then AI will actually answer it. And you will see like in the first line, the first paragraph will be AI actually giving you the answer for that. Is there any way that a business can leverage this?
Yeah. So the real answer to that is exactly what I had mentioned before, going through the best practices, being the best to answer that question, right? So you really need to understand what that question is and why your answer should show up over anyone else's. There's nothing more to it than that. And then obviously there's the technical aspects, making sure you're findable. The reality is you can also measure that. So you can actually go into your Google Search Console and you actually see if you have won, you know, that answer engine and where you rank within it. And then you can kind of figure out what you need to do to be there, but you can't force your way in. The way that works, like I said, is it's parsing paragraphs and it's taking what they call vectors and looking. It's called a RAG system, not to get too technical. And what they're doing is they're searching for the best answer and parsing paragraphs within your site. So the way you structure your content and the way that you answer that question and that you're the most relevant is what's going to get picked. And then you can start measuring it in Google Search, Search Console, and start seeing what you need to do to win. And you can also start measuring. The other thing that you can do is you can see what other sources it looked at. So you can study. You can study it in the back end and you can actually start saying, well, what sources did it pull from? Was it directly from my website? Was it looking at a third party site? Was it not? And then you can, you know, make sure that you show up for that. And that's kind of what we do for clients all the time. And it's not just one, it's multiple questions that we want to be able to answer that we feel like we have the right to win, right? You want to be the one that should be in an authority to actually win that and not go after ones where you don't think you do have the authority to answer that, or you don't have any business answering that question.
Thank you. Let's say that you're trying to rank for how to find customers in with ChatGPT, okay, or like any other phrase, And let's say that you know that a variation of that same phrase has, let's say, 100,000 searches per month in Google worldwide. And let's say that you know that how customers can find you in ChatGPT and Google, let's say it has 1 million searches per month worldwide, but the competitiveness of it is much greater. How do you choose the kind of keywords and phrases that you should be ranking for, considering that some keywords are highly competitive? And then others are, let's say, less competitive but less searched as well. So perhaps there's only 500 people looking for this particular thing in your local area. How do you choose which one, like the balance between a highly competitive keyword and your ability to actually rank for that particular thing?
Yes, that's a great question. And I think when you look at search, that paid search, you ask that question all the time. How important is this? How much am I going to pay for it, right? Everybody's kind of going after some of those keywords that are so important when it comes to SEO, as much as even if you want to go after it, you might not be able to because it's so saturated. I think that's where the research comes in, and that's kind of what we do, with our teams. And what we do is we kind of, like I mentioned, we evolved from keyword research to more thematic, types of themes and questions that people are answering. And we sort of map that all out, at the beginning. And then we break that all down, all these themes into, what the competition and the monthly search volume is. We call it MSV, the monthly search volume. And then you'll look at the competition and you'll look how many people are ranking it and for it and where you fit into it. And we kind of group them into sort of, what are opportunity keywords that you're really close to that we want to push you to, or how far you are from there. And it's important, right? If you're not even close to ranking right now at all, how much effort is it going to take to go there? And what we do is kind of a competitive gap. So we look at all the competition and we see where the gaps are in it. And that's when we make our strategy and decide if we're going to go for it or not. And then you also have to, balance that with how important is that for my business, right? If I am selling ERP for a 3PL or for construction software or for something like that, I mean, the core terms of my services, I need to be ranking whether I'm not, and so we have to attack it. But if it's something where there's a lot of people vying for it and a lot of volume, but it's and you're far off from it, but it's not actually going to contribute to your success or bring any value or traffic, then we might decide not to go for it. So I think you need to map it all out. You need to decide, and then strategically, that's where we come and help people decide if they even have a chance to go after some of these topics.
Thank you. Let's say a coach would like to rank as a number one, I don't know, branding strategist or number one book publisher or number one, I don't know, construction person in their local area. They want to be known as the number one person there. Is there any extra tip that you can give us in terms of helping customers find this kind of person? Like, is there anything that a business could do to actually be able to be found and to be recognized as the kind of thought leader they want to be recognized for? And in terms of like reputation management and in terms of like any other tip for ChatGPT and Google?
I think everything you do is not in, it's not really about intensity. It's about consistency. So, my first question to that is there is no real way of doing it right away. It's about applying everything that I had mentioned. Even some client that comes to us and say, "Hey, I want to rank in ChatGPT," I'm saying, "Well, what kind of content have you done in the past? What kind of, authority building have you done? What kind, what have you done on a brand building level?" Right? Like relevance is not sort of no longer universal, right? And so I would ask and say, "What has been done before?" It's not as straightforward. Hey, this is a hack that's going to get you on, just start creating a lot of content and it's going to get you there. No, it's about doing everything that I had mentioned earlier consistently over time, and then iterating it and iterating it and iterating off of it. So, you want to build a blueprint of all the things that you need to do. Is it, do we need to fix, like, the first things first, if you're not being able to be found, like I mentioned, you don't have the pass to get in, like, that's where we'll focus. If you're missing the brand building equation because you are not linking to anybody else, nobody is linking to you, you are not in the news, you have not, people are not talking about your brand, people are not talking about your brand positively, well, then maybe that's the area that we're going to focus on and then move and get that well. If you have not created content and then you dump 25 blog posts that were written by AI and think that that's going to help you rank, well, then I'm going to say, hey, we need, maybe you have some really good content on your website that could be updated and can really work better for you than it is now. You know, so like I mentioned in RAG systems, retrieved items are consumed by an LLM. And they typically ingest a set of passages rather than scanning sort of a rank list like a human. So this classic like position discounts and relevancy only assumptions can be sort of misaligned with the end-to-end answer. So I think it's really important that it's, you know, answering questions for humans, and we dissect it like a doctor when, you know, when you have a symptom, we need to go through all the checks and then kind of attack it with a plan. And that's the way that we take it. So the answer is no, there is no, just do this. It does not work.
Thank you. What would you say to a 9-figure millionaire? Okay. Someone who was, yeah, selling $100 million a year or more, or $500 million, whatever. And let's say they have been relatively quiet and private about their life. And I actually know a few of those kind of people, that have been very private about their life and, you know, kept themselves under wraps, and have been sort of, I don't know how it's even possible, have been quietly building a large business or multiple of them. And then let's say now they turn, I don't know, 50 or 55 or something. And then all of a sudden they want to be popular. They want to start sharing their message. They want to leave a legacy. And let's say they have no blueprint, like they have literally no, they have no trace of them in Google. Like if you search them, they have 100 followers in Instagram. Maybe they're not even there. Maybe they're not even on LinkedIn because they have, there's a lot of like these kind of like, I like to call them underground multimillionaires that are kind of keeping themselves very private. And they are very well known in those kind of like, you know, very wealthy circles, but they don't put any stuff on social media, but now they want to. So where would someone start that wants to go from like zero to being found in ChatGPT and Google for, let's say, speaking opportunities? Because, you know, someone like that who, you know, is selling hundreds of millions of dollars a year has a lot to share. And let's say currently they're not found by anybody.
Yeah, so I think that's a great starting point because they have the building blocks, right? They're clearly doing really well. So there's a lot of different things. The first is that they need to build their brand, right? And they absolutely need to build their brand and get the mentions, because maybe what they're doing, like, it's a great place to start that what they're doing has been successful, right? Now it's about getting people to know about it, right? So you absolutely need to build your brand, and you need to do it positively. You need to be, you know, for example, that you mentioned that, you know, they're a speaker. Well, is the Better Business, the Better Speaker Bureau business linking to them? Do they have a profile on their website? Are they linking, hey, I'm findable here, right? Now, are they taking all the podcasts they've done, taking all the transcripts, finding ways to put it onto their website, making it findable? Are they linking from their site? Is everything on YouTube now? Do they have a YouTube strategy where they can actually go adjust their titles for what people are searching, add their name in there because they weren't on there, start publishing a lot of that content, right? Have they won awards? If they won awards, are they using those trust signals on their website, linking back to those sites, having those sites linked to them? Those are the things that I would do. What are the top topics that they speak on? Have they made any really good talks that they can now turn into blog posts and then start putting it as a blog on their website, right? Did they create a Substack, which is another, you know, are they involved in Reddit, which answer engines pick, right? The other thing is reviews. You said, you know, if this person is doing, a lot of millions of dollars worth of talking or helping, they're clearly going to have people who have validated for them. Are they collecting these reviews and having them influence it as well? So, you know, that's the way that I think you would work backwards from that problem. Hey, I'm doing something really great. Now I just kind of need to build my brand and I need to get these mentions and these citations. And those are some of the things that I would do.
Thank you. Tell us about yourself and how what you feel is important to build a brand so that once customers find you, let's say in ChatGPT and Google, you actually have a great business that can deliver. And what would you say are the really important commandments that a business should have in place so that when customers find you, they turn into loyal customers for a really long time?
So loaded question about how to build a brand, right? I think a lot of stuff there to unpack, because building a brand is also about building a company. And then we can get into, you know, how do you build a great company? You can grow a great brand, but, you know, it's really interesting that the whole thing about trust and even trust between people takes a really long time to build it, and it can take a split second to break it. So I always go back to that consistency. The thing about building a brand is that a lot of people give up on it, the brand building aspect, and they just jump into lower funnel sales, right? So if we're talking about being a brand, like it's actually about taking the time to recognize what is that brand? What do I stand for? What is my tone? Who are my customers? Who do I care for? What are my values? And actually then going and living that and creating campaigns. Are we an entertainment brand? Are we, you know, what products do we have? So I think it's a very, very, very loaded question on sort of brand building, which people don't always understand that 95% of customers are not in market for the product or service that you offer. I don't care if you sell cars or SaaS or books, they are not thinking of buying your product right now, right? There's only 5% that are roughly, you know, in market, right? From Byron Sharp. And your goal as a brand is to create that, mental and physical availability so that when they're ready to buy your brand, you know, they think of you. So all of those brand health metrics, there's a reason that they measure sort of consideration and familiarity. And you need to be working on that all the time and not at the cost of just looking for sales. Now, moving into, you know, why, what I think is important to build a company, that's a totally different question about how you treat your employees, how you build the right people, how you execute, how you build systems, how you stay close to your customers. Those are a whole kind of other slew of things. But from a brand, storytelling, consistency, having a true actual meaning of what that brand stands for, and then constantly doing that instead of just chasing sales.
Thank you. How can a company become investable because you're an investor in several startups, right? So yeah. What would you say if you were to check out a startup that wanted to get investment from you? What are the kind of elements you would like to see when you're checking them out in social media and in Google and in ChatGPT? What are the kind of things you would like them to kind of portray in social media? And imagine they haven't been there for that long as to perhaps have all the different elements that you said. What would you say are the very minimum things they should have to build enough trust for you to invest in them?
Okay, well, I mean, you buy companies for different, or whether you're buying or you're investing, there's all different types of reasons why. You know, some could be for a service, some could be for a product, some could be a distressed asset that you're looking to improve on their margins. It could be that you're trying to roll it up within years to grow your presence. So I think acquiring and investing, you have to start with the purpose. You know, is it a long-term investment, a short-term investment? So all those things really factor in. But I do think if I'm looking to give, you know, because I don't think there's one answer, but I do think one of the biggest mistakes, you know, entrepreneurs make when they try and achieve their results is that, you know, you look at it, I think it's 22% of new US businesses close within their first year of operation. I don't think it's as drastic as about like everybody says, like, oh, it's like, you know, almost all of them close. No, half or fail or stop operating by year five, right? And then by year 10, you have around 65% of new businesses have closed. So meaning only about one third remain after a decade. So, and that doesn't mean that that's necessarily wrong. Some businesses are meant to be sold, Some businesses are meant to be folded up and sold, and that's okay too. So I do think you need to understand what you're trying to achieve by it. And I think the right thing is to study what those businesses did. And I think Bain and Company sort of found that 12% of those business transformations achieved their original ambition only. So the vast majority, almost 88%, don't deliver what they set out to do. And I think every case is unique, but I think the common goals of things that I've seen fail is that entrepreneurs systematically overestimate demand, like speed and their own ability to execute. So this is one of the most robust findings in behavioral economics. So I think optimum helps people start, but it really hurts decision quality later. I think, so that's a mistake I've seen. I think falling in love with the idea instead of the problem is a big area I've seen that I know entrepreneurs, they sort of fall in love with this idea instead of sort of obsessing over the customer and the economics. This leads to sort of premature scaling, feature bloating, and weak product to market fit, just something that I look in, like total addressable market. You know, there's this sort of, are we going really niche or what's the total addressable market? And that kind of helps. And if you don't understand demand, cash flow, and who actually does the work, no amount of vision is going to save you. And then the other thing I look at is like, are you confusing activity with progress? So entrepreneurs often mistake motion, like these meetings and lunches and visibility, for actual traction. And I think this is amplified by social media and by public metrics. And that's something I think is important. And the last is like the team and the culture, right? Like, I think leaders often select and reward charisma over ability. And they sort of mistake this like self-belief for skill. And I think over time that sort of creates cultures where impression management sort of beats real performance. So that those are some of the things that that I look at when it comes to businesses and how they operate.
Thank you. And lastly, how customers do find you in ChatGPT and Google? Is it that you create a lot of articles, or is it that you implement all of the techniques you talked about today?
So it's absolutely all the techniques. And if you actually, what's interesting about us as an agency is really cool is that we practice what we preach and we learn as we go. And I think that's our differentiator in the types of content that we set out to do, in the way that we have personal branding within the company and then branding within the company. And the way we test our own landing pages, the way we sell things, we have tools and that we're doing, and that helps us. So we're not just a consultant on the side telling clients, hey, I think you should get ranked in ChatGPT and this is how you do it. We're actively doing that and testing it for ourselves. And then on top of it, we develop technology that allows us to be able to study all these millions and billions of data points that are coming in to be able to make those right decisions. So the answer is a lot of hard work, a lot of what I call experiments. You know, we had a client the other day saying, hey, if I make this site on my change, can you show me a case study and guarantee that I'm going to be ranked? I said, LLMs came out last year. We're going to experiment with this. We think this is going to help. Let's experiment. Let's do it. We're in that path now where we're seeing, you know, very little overlap from different LLMs. We are seeing things change drastically. We're seeing, you know, more importance. But I did mention LLMs are open source. We know how they work, right? So that doesn't mean there's a hack. That means that we know what it looks like to give real answers for real humans. And so we can guide, you know, our clients through that, and then we're doing it ourselves. And it's, again, it's all about that consistency, and we're doing it every day. We're trying different things, but we're always making sure that what we're doing is providing real value out into the world, into the content that we put. And we feel like when you do really good value, and you'll get the authority that will come back. It's just about doing it every day and showing up every day and trying and experimenting with it. So
thank you. Tell us where entrepreneurs can connect with you and get some information about how how they can use this information so their customers can find them in ChatGPT and Google.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you can look up our blog, Neil Patel. That's, you know, we're writing about this subject all the time. So you can go to neilpatel.com. You can also go to npdigital.com and you can look at our webinar series. So we do them almost every 2 weeks and we deep dive. We spend an hour deep diving into sort of all these topics. And then we have a vast amount of content. And then if you're looking to ask any questions, you can find me on LinkedIn, Ronnie Blefsky. You can just, you know, write in my DMs and ask me any questions, or you can take my email. It's ronnie@npdigital.com and ask any questions, and I'm more than happy to answer.
Thank you.
Follow us for more interviews with world's most influential business titans, providing you with the insights to awaken to your full potential so you can get paid to be yourself, find true happiness, and manifest anything you desire.